Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. It's been a while since I've covered anything that David Reeves has done on my channel, and the reason for that is quite simple, really. He hasn't been up to much. Not much that is interesting, anyway. So I dug through his archives a bit and found this video from 2015 discussing misconceptions about dinosaurs. Love a good dinosaur video. Dinosaurs are so cool, so let's get ready for the inevitable claim that dragon legends are based on dinosaurs.
I be a Bible-believing Christian and believe in dinosaurs?
That question keeps getting asked by apologists as though there is any doubt. I have never come across a Christian organization who doesn't think that dinosaurs existed at all, just some that accept the science and know that they existed tens of millions of years ago, and others like David here who think that they were vegan animals that lived alongside humans until the flood, after which they faded into legends of dragons.
You know, the kind of dinosaurs we see in the movie? Right, you know, those scary ones that lived millions of years ago, that killed everything in sight, and then inexplicably turned into birds after all dying in a meteor explosion.
You can tell by his tone of voice and his smug little smile that he thinks that that's a gotcha of some sort. How could they possibly have turned into birds if they all died, after all? The obvious answer here is that they didn't all die, just most of them. And the ones that were left were best suited to an avian lifestyle, and so over the last 65 million years have become the birds that we know and love today. Now, if there has been a repeat theme on my channel lately, it has been amateur apologists seeing presentations like this one, and being set up for failure when they think that the picture of evolution painted by people like David Reeves is an accurate picture. If your side has to rely on misrepresentation in order to survive, then that doesn't leave me with much confidence in your side.
Well, maybe not those. You see, some of that is fiction.
Yeah, it turns out that when you just make shit up, that shit is made up.
I've been on paleontological digs, and I've dug up the bones of these monsters that you see in the movies. They were real. There's a few things that we hear about these creatures that are not based on fact. So let's see if I can go over a few. Number one. When I dig up the bones, I've never yet found a date stamped on one saying, deposited 65 million years BC.
Yeah, when you tag along as a paleontology tourist, the real paleontologists likely aren't worried too much about explaining in great detail how we know the ages of the various fossils, but the fact that the information wasn't blatantly staring you in the face in a manner that an elementary school child could understand does not mean that the information isn't there or that it is impossible to find.
In fact, what's getting a lot of attention within the scientific community these days is the discovery of soft tissue inside some of these bones.
If by a lot of attention in the scientific community you mean a few small teams working on it and every creationist organization misrepresenting it, then I guess, yeah. It certainly is an interesting discovery that has led to some paleontological advances, but it was not the groundbreaking shake-up-the-whole-dinosaur-timeline discovery that creationists like to pretend it was. I would be willing to bet that he doesn't mention the fact that in order to find the soft tissue, the hard parts of the fossil had to first be dissolved away in an acid bath, leaving the microscopic soft bits behind. Or the fact that the only proteins found were collagen, actin, and tubulin, proteins that are known to have structures that resist degradation, especially when cross-linked, with tests revealing that the proteins found in the dinosaur bones were indeed very highly cross-linked. Or just the basic fact that degradation rates vary quite a bit for tissues, depending on many environmental factors.
Now, this soft tissue should not even last for 100,000 years.
Under what conditions, David? Would you not agree that the conditions under which a material is stored can affect how long it will last? If you leave some meat sitting out on your counter, it'll be a matter of hours until it's no longer safe to eat. But bury that same meat in some salt, and it can last for weeks. Add in some refrigeration, and it can last for months to years. And this is just how long it would be safe to eat for. We're not even talking about total decomposition yet. So if you bury soft tissues somewhere like, oh, I don't know, say, the sandstone that most of the soft tissue fossils are found in, it has the property of wicking moisture away from the fossil, along with the microbes that cause decomposition. And then after being buried in this manner that is conducive to preservation, you also have a lot of an iron-rich substance hanging out. That would be the hemoglobin from red blood cells. This creates an environment that is extremely conducive to prolonging the lifespan of soft tissues. And there is no reason they could not have lasted the 65 million years that they appear to have lasted.
Much less the millions required for evolution.
How do you know, David? Have you done that experiment? Have you observed that? Why do you just get to throw out baseless assumptions like that, all while expecting the evolution side of the debate to have all the answers fully loaded with direct observation in lab settings? Though, in lab settings, ostrich collagen would decompose after a couple of days under normal conditions, but when put in close proximity to hemoglobin, it lasted for 2 years with no sign of decay. Probably could have gone longer, but I imagine funding for that kind of experiment would be difficult to continue to obtain. 2 years isn't millions, no, but it demonstrates that the presence of hemoglobin has a profound impact on the rate of decay. In this case, decaying at least 240 times slower than collagen not in the presence of hemoglobin.
Now, number two, while we know that dinosaurs really did eat other animals, because we sometimes find these other creatures in their stomachs, it doesn't mean that they were ferocious creatures.
Right, they always said please and thank you when hunting down and killing their prey. Not all dinosaurs were carnivores, but there are plenty that absolutely were. Their level of ferocity is irrelevant. I'm not even sure what point you're trying to make here, unless you're trying to go for that thing where they were vegetarian before the fall, but your admission that we've found other animals in their stomachs kind of refutes that.
In fact, sperm whales and warthogs and other creatures have long, sharp teeth that look remarkably similar to the T-Rex. But they aren't carnivorous killing machines.
Sperm whales eat giant squids, sharks, skates, and other fish. That sounds pretty carnivorous to me. I mean, certainly not carnivorous in the sense that it's a member of the Carnivora phyla, but dinosaurs weren't either, so that's irrelevant. I just want to point out that there is a difference between being a carnivore based on your diet and being a carnivore taxonomically. And warthogs might have a couple of big scary-looking tusks, but after that, it's all a bunch of molars, perfect for grinding up plant material. And as you mentioned, we find other animals in the stomachs and droppings of some dinosaurs. Funnily enough, with the possible exception of a handful of dinosaur species that didn't have any teeth, the stomach and dropping contents match up perfectly with their tooth style. The dinos with sharp serrated teeth are the ones in whose stomachs and droppings we find other dinosaurs, while dinos with flat, heavily calcified teeth have plant material in their stomachs and droppings. Almost like teeth actually are indicative of diet.
Okay, so you still probably wouldn't have wanted a pair of velociraptors as pets.
He says as he zooms into some of the features that make it obvious that these guys were killing machines. Also, remember his jab earlier about dinosaurs turning into birds? Well, velociraptor fossils have been found with quill knobs in locations that correspond to the flight feathers of birds. And contrary to what you might have learned while watching Jurassic Park, it looks like their classic enlarged talon was probably used in a similar manner as the enlarged digit 2 talon of modern hawks and eagles, which they use to keep a grip on their prey while pinning them down with their body weight. Raptors are some of the most bird-like dinosaurs that there are without getting into actual bird territory, and you can probably guess that pretty easily by the fact that there is a class of birds in existence today that are also known as raptors.
But trying to describe their behavior from a bunch of bones takes quite a bit of speculation.
Not really. I mean, you can often find speculative flowery accounts of a day in the life of a dinosaur being published in popular media outlets, but there are definitely things that can be determined about behavior not just from bones, but also footprints, nests, droppings, and stomach contents. It's certainly not easy, but it's not nearly as speculative as creationists would have us believe. We don't see herbivores today with sharp, pointy, serrated teeth. Those are on the carnivores. You don't find animals in the stomachs of herbivores, except for maybe the occasional baby chicken that a calcium-deficient cow might eat. Though, in the cases of mineral deficiency, it's more normal for an herbivore to gnaw on bones of already dead animals than to just straight up eat a live animal. But yeah, we found duck-billed hadrosaur bones in T-Rex droppings. When herbivores do eat other animals because of a mineral deficiency, it's animals they can fit in their mouths in one bite. Hadrosaurs are a bit big for that, even for a T-Rex. Herbivores also don't have the same structures on their skulls that anchor extra muscles to support stronger jaws, and there are a lot of other features that are looked at to determine not just diet, but behavior in general.
So, Number three, you might have heard that the last dinos went extinct millions of years ago.
The last non-avian dinos, sure. But remember, birds are theropod dinosaurs.
But dating methods show huge discrepancies in the alleged ages of dinosaur remains.
Not when used properly, they don't. At least not with any consistency. There will always be cases of samples that were handled improperly or conditions in nature that are not conducive to the dating methods we have so far, and et cetera, et cetera. But generally, no, there aren't any discrepancies.
There's something going on here. Recently, a dozen carefully collected and preserved samples of fossils and dinosaur remains were sent in for testing. Now, measurable amounts of carbon-14 were found in every single one.
I'm not sure which specific iteration of the stunt he's referring to, but this is something that creationists have been doing at least since the 90s and probably even earlier. Yeah, when you date a sample with the wrong dating method, you get wrong results. Now, why was there carbon-14 in these samples when it should have all been decayed away after 100,000 years? Well, there are a number of factors that can have an impact here. Where were the samples taken from? Were they exposed to groundwater containing carbon-14 in the last 100,000 years? Were they exposed to volcanic gases? Was there coal nearby? Was there uranium nearby? All of those could have contaminated the samples with carbon-14. Notably, the older a sample is, the less contamination is needed in order to massively skew the age, meaning that extra precautions need to be taken when dating older samples. Sometimes there can be stray carbon-14 atoms in the mass spectrometer itself, and this can end up as part of the measurement. So this is something that would be accounted for in the error bars of a normal measurement, but would end up yielding extraordinarily young ages for a sample that is too old to be carbon dated.
The maximum limit for C14 is about 80 to 100,000 years. Maximum.
Yes, and as such, the detection of one single atom of carbon-14 would then cause an erroneous date measurement. Can you outline the steps that the creationist researchers took to ensure that not even one single atom of carbon-14 contaminated their sample at any point in time?
The current evolutionary theories need at least 50 million years for dinosaurs.
I'm not sure where you're getting that number from. The non-avian dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago, and they existed for a total of about 165 million years before that. So where is 50 million years coming in?
So maybe it's time for a reevaluation.
Reevaluations happen all the time. In fact, creationists will often latch on to reevaluations when they do happen, so that they can jump out and yell, "Aha! You said the species died out 67 million years ago, but now you've found a specimen that's only 66 million years old! You must not know anything about proper dating methods! They're all wrong!" And yet, in this hypothetical, if they had stuck to their guns and denied the existence of the 66-million-year-old specimen, creationists would then point out that the 66-million-year-old specimen doesn't fit in with the timeline. This proves that evolutionists are lying to promote evolution. It's lose-lose for team evolution when team creation won't even bother trying to be consistent.
So are dinosaurs real? Sure they're real. They're even found in the Bible.
No, they really aren't. Behemoth is most likely a hippo, in my opinion. Some people think it may have been an elephant, and I can also see that. Leviathan is most likely a Hebrew exercise in syncretism, the amalgamation of different religious elements into their religion. A common theme in ancient Mesopotamian religions was a new god replacing an old god by defeating it in battle. In the Bible, several times when it mentions Leviathan, it's with regards to God defeating it in battle. Psalm 74, 13 and 14. You divided the sea by your might. You broke the head of the sea monsters of the waters. You crushed the heads of Leviathan. You gave him as food to the creatures of the wilderness. Now, if it needs to be compared to an actual living animal, then it fits a description of a Nile crocodile pretty well. Around his teeth is terror. His back is made of rows of shields, shut up closely as with a seal. Then it goes into a description of him breathing smoke and fire, which neither crocodiles nor dinosaurs could do, so that part seems irrelevant to me. Then picking up after the smoke and fire, in his neck abides strength and terror dances before him. The folds of his flesh stick together, firmly cast on him and immovable. Now, remember how when I talk about Behemoth, I always make sure to bring up the fact that he moves his tail like a cedar is a biblical euphemism for swinging his dick around like a giant tree? Well, we get another potential dick joke here. His underparts are like sharp potsherds. Potsherds being broken pieces of pottery. Crocodiles, like alligators, have permanently erect, spring-loaded penises that hide out in their cloaca until needed. So they have a nice sharp surprise ready to pop out and stab the right orifice. So, Leviathan is either a representation of a deity that Yahweh defeated to become supreme, or a crocodile. Or a combination of the two. Could be both.
Both. Both is good.
But dinosaur is a recent word, and until modern day, most people call dinosaurs dragons.
And there it is. Called it. Dragons are real. The main problem with this is that, yes, dinosaur is a recent word, but if you look at the dragon myths, they are almost always described in a very serpent-like fashion, not dinosaur-like. Dragons that look dinosaur-ish didn't start showing up until after we figured out what dinosaurs were. So, yeah, when you retcon a modern interpretation of a dragon into old dragon myths, it can seem like dinosaurs might be a plausible explanation. But the fact of the matter is that ancient dragon myths have very little in common with dinosaurs.
Dinosaur means terrible lizard, and while they certainly were very large lizards, we don't know how terrible they actually were.
That is not only completely irrelevant, but it's also not entirely accurate. Yes, dinos gets translated as terrible, but terrible doesn't necessarily denote behavior. It could be referring to the amount of terror it is likely to inspire in someone that sees it. If you were to see a T-Rex alive and up close, that would be pretty terrifying whether the T-Rex intended to eat you or not.
But they must have been a sight to behold. We often think of the term dinosaur as meaning prehistoric or ancient. But there are accounts all around the world of people fighting huge, terrible lizards and dragons.
Terrible serpents and dragons would be more accurate there. And as long as we're utilizing arguments from etymology, I may as well point out that the word dragon literally comes from the Greek word for serpent, drakon.
I mean, think of medieval legends and Chinese symbolism. Maybe there's more to the story than we're being told in schools.
There undoubtedly is more to the story than we're being told in schools. Because we haven't figured out every detail of the whole story yet. But one thing I can guarantee is that the more to the story will not be dinosaurs were actually fire-breathing dragons and Game of Thrones was real history.
Maybe the children's stories and fairy tales about these dinosaurs living 65 million years ago are just that. Fairy tales.
You can call it children's stories and fairy tales if you like, but referring to facts with terminology that is supposed to denigrate those facts does not stop them from being facts and only serves to make you look childish. And while we're at it, which of us is advocating for belief in literal dragons again?
The Bible says that land animals that walked on all four, like dinosaurs, were created along with other animals during the creation week.
Yes, the Bible was indeed wrong about that, and many other things.
That means that mankind would have seen these creatures.
I guess if you take the Bible literally and at face value. But if we're taking the Bible literally and at face value, then Adam died in the day he ate the fruit and so didn't live long enough to have kids, so humanity doesn't exist. Given that humanity does exist, I'm going to go ahead and assume that there are at least a couple issues with that story where, even if it were true in some sense, the sense in which it might be true cannot possibly be a literal sense.
In fact, again and again, new scientific discoveries are consistently confirming what was written in the Bible all along.
Not really sure how you reach that conclusion. The latest discovery that creationists promote as being science that confirms the Bible is the 2005 discovery of soft tissue in dinosaur fossils. Maybe David is unaware of this, but there have been many scientific discoveries in the last 17 years. Not a one of them has confirmed a literal interpretation of anything in Genesis. And that's it for this one. Short one today, I guess. Today's comment of the day comes to us from David Mansfield, who says, "Ha! You're talking about the Christian persecution complex, and there was an ad on your video for a PureFlix movie about Christian persecution." Yeah, I had a feeling that might happen. The algorithm's generally pretty good at matching topics, but it's not good at figuring out which side of the topic various people are on. So if I mention Christian persecution enough, it'll start serving up ads for exactly the kind of persecution porn that I was criticizing in that video. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, iOS Tiltbill Gamer, Clench Eastwood, Mark McManus, Mark Ketchum, and all the rest, who are the spring that makes the gator penis that is my channel go pop. If you'd like to have a surprise up your cloaca, then you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino, or by supporting the channel in one of the other methods that can be found at links.vicerhino.com, which is also where you'll find links to my other projects. If for whatever reason you want to send me stuff, my P.O. Box address is in the description. See you next time! Time.